afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, and I'm Elodie Cederstrom. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's April 6th. It's Friday. It's 2019. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, happy Friday, Melody.
Hey, happy Friday to you. Happy Friday to the listeners. And it was really a weird day in news today. A lot of hoopla and you know what, Dave? It's only going to get better from here. We're already in the pre-election of 2020, and it's just like, oh my gosh. I don't know if I can take it this time around, but at least we had a little bit of a decent day in gold. Of course, it's off from the high of 1290, settling out at 1286, up $8.70. Silver was up 12 cents today at $15.17, only 2 cents off the high. Platinum was up 12 bucks, 902, but palladium was the winner of the day, up almost 2.5%. 34 bucks at $1,467. Little pressure on the dollar, down 0.14 at 98.03. Huge day, 98 on the dollar. Crude oil down 2.33 at 62.88, and we'll have to tell you that the reasons. Supposedly that is, I guess, only a phone call. You can turn those oil prices around with just a phone call.
As Greenspan said, it's not what you do, it's what you say that counts.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And, I guess he was too. But anyway, so crude oil down 233 at 62.88. And the paper markets today, let me go ahead and bring those up. Didn't have a chance to follow these today, so it'll be interesting. The Dow was up 80. You know what? That's a sad number considering the GDP number that was released. But, perhaps the Dow knew what number was going to be released earlier in the week, and the big gains that we've seen, was in anticipation to that. So the NASDAQ was up 27 points at 81.46, because I guarantee you, ladies and gentlemen, they all know before we do. Wall Street knows before they release the numbers. Yes, even though they say no. Well, I disagree. S&P up 13 at 29.39, and Ford is being investigated by the U.S. Justice Department over emissions. 10-year yield 2.50%, the euro 111, European Asian markets basically unchanged, very little trade, very little action, I should say. Bitcoin was down a little over 5% today. And let's see if there's any. So gold had a good day today. We're going to talk a little bit about gold later on in the program. But first, let's go ahead and get started with why we've seen such strong markets. And of course, everyone is talking about our strong GDP up 3.2% for the first quarter, January through March. And of course, we all know we've been talking about this, about expectations. We're a lot cooler than the 3.2%, much weaker. But there was a lot of warnings coming out with economists. We had better than expected growth, the ongoing strength in the job market, fresh stock market highs this week are kind of eliminating the fears that a recession or a severe downturn is on the horizon. The slowdown in Europe and China appears to have little effect on the U.S. Many economists initially predicted the anemic growth at the start of the year, and they were talking about in part because of the government shutdown. But then again, that really doesn't make much sense because the shutdown wouldn't have anything to do with GDP. They don't produce anything. I just figured it's hard to believe. Now, the only thing that I could see, Dave, is because the December was such a weak month that what happened in December, it all rebounded in the following months to make up for December. Because everybody forgets what happened in December.
Well, you know, growth ended up coming in almost a full percentage point higher than expected. That's the best start to the year since 2015. But over half of the strong first quarter growth was driven, they say, by a surge in inventories plus U.S. exports to other nations. That's an unusual situation since consumer spending in particular, to a lesser extent, business spending, normally propels growth. A jump in state and local government spending also boosted growth by the biggest amount in 3 years. Now, of course, the debate's underway about what's going to happen the rest of the year, as well as early next year. It's a key moment when many Americans are likely to take stock of how the economy is doing ahead of the November elections.
You know, I tried to find out what the exports were that because they were so strong. Because you're right, you know, usually you're the, you know, the imports. But the only thing I can imagine is the agriculture, maybe to China has picked up the soybean. But I couldn't find any where they had the actual breakdown on, you know, what was actually included in that. And of course, I don't know weapons. You know, our weapons that we sell to the Saudis, I don't know if that would reflect on GDP or oil. You know, so we'll find that out later on and bring that to you on Monday, a little bit more of a breakdown on this GDP number to see exactly, you know, why it was so much stronger and if it was just a really a carryover from the weak December. I mean, you see the same thing in precious metals. I mean, you can see, you know, if you have a weak, you know, month in prices or so forth, and something happens, you have a pickup. You know, you have a, you know, a little bit of a lagging number and so forth. So, and it is interesting. It is the first quarter growth is typically the weakest of the year. So we'll see what the rest of the year goes like. I can't say that we're going to have a strong year just because the first quarter is strong, Dave.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, consensus, although, you know, presumably everyone's going to be revising their second, third, and fourth
Yeah.
quarter estimates, you know, now that it's so far exceeded expectations. I suspect there's still going to be, you know, and I mean, who knows what we're going to see? We don't know what's going to happen between now and December 31st, but I suspect a lot of averages are still going to come in around 2.5% for the year and not 3% like Kevin Hassett and other administration officials are saying. But you never know, they're the experts.
And the thing of it is, you never know during an election year. I mean, it used to be if the election was in 2020, it was just that year where you could bet on a fairly good economy. Now they bring it all the way out prior to the primaries, you know, to try to make sure that the economy was good and there wouldn't be anything to kick the president out of their position for that election year, or you know, all the other politicians, so to speak. So I don't know. We'll wait and see. But so hey, maybe we can have a strong economy at these numbers from now until 2020. But then I would hate to see what happens after 2020.
Well, you know, the first tax filing season under the president's tax cuts is now over, or I should say, mostly over. Let's see. The results show that slightly more Americans received tax funds, but that the checks they received were smaller. Excuse me one second. The average refund this year was $2,725. That's down 55 from last year, according to data released this week by the IRS. That includes every return filed by April 15th. Now, many Americans, as we know, you know, lashed out at Trump and Republicans as they filed tax returns and realized they would receive a lower refund than they obtained last year. Americans love tax refunds, viewing them almost like a savings bonus, even though all it means really is that a person overpaid taxes during the year and is receiving that extra amount back. Financial experts advise people not to get refunds because it just means someone lent the federal government money. True, but a lot of
At
times
no
easier said than
interest,
done. Correct.
at no interest, which is, But anyway, you have the data also shows that the vast majority of tax filers, 73.2% of them, or about 96 million people, receive refunds for this filing season. And that is a slight increase from the 2018 tax filing season. And the IRS and the U.S. Treasury officials has anticipated that fewer people would receive refunds this year and that the amounts would be lower. But the refund trends turned out to be similar to the prior year. So after the new tax law took effect, IRS staffers did tweak the withholding calculations, the amount of money deducted for taxes from a person's paycheck, to adjust for the new rules and to try to make it so that more Americans were perfectly withheld. You know, and again, you know, if you don't have to withhold, you know, anyway, don't let them use your money, Dave.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's I guess it's unclear how many of us actually received a significantly smaller refund this year compared to last. That's because the IRS provides only average refund data. Some people mistakenly thought a smaller refund was a sign they didn't get a tax cut, but there's no connection between them at all. The vast majority of Americans were expected to get a tax cut in the first year under the new law. Taxpayers in the 1%, which is those earning more than $733,000, received the benefit of about $51,000, or 3.4% of their income. That's according to the Tax Policy Center. And middle-class taxpayers, those making between $49,000 to $86,000, someone filing single, were expected to get a benefit of $930, or 1.6% of their income.
You know, we saw oil prices tumbled as much times as 4% today. Of course, extending early losses after President Trump said he told OPEC to take action to temper fuel costs.
Yes.
Oh, I'm so glad he did that. And I don't mean to make light of that, Dave.
I waited to fill my tank till this afternoon, Melody. Strictly a coincidence.
Because you knew that after he said that, they would lower the pricing?
I actually saw the headlines, then headed for the gas station.
Oh, yes. They do work quick, don't they? And you know what, and ladies and gentlemen, really, you really think oil prices had anything to do with a phone call? God bless people who think that. Mm. But my question is, what do you think OPEC is going to do? Because we're funding their war in Yemen. And we had Congress who tried to stop the funding, and it was vetoed by the president. And but no one talks about that war. That's just another war that nobody cares about. All those people dying, starving, being bombed. For what? Why are we supporting that war?
Oil.
Nobody talks about that humanitarian crisis. No one. It's just... So that is why your oil prices are coming down. So I'm not sure who has who over the barrel, no pun intended. But anyway, we saw the national average for a gallon of regular gasoline to $2.88 per gallon. That's up $2.87 a day ago and $2.83 a week ago. And a wholesale U.S. gasoline prices did tick lower in recent days, but they're still up about 10% from a week ago. And they're still up 7% from a month ago. U.S. West Texas intermediate crude futures fell $2, 2.15, or 3.3%. And the WTI had been on track for about its eighth successive weekly gain. And, of course, that is the longest weekly run since the first half of 2015. And, you know, when you think about it, Dave, you know, they talk about the first quarter GDP being the strongest since 2015, and now here you have WTI on track for its eighth successive weekly gain since the first half of 2015. So,
yeah, funny how things work. You know, the White House said it had secured commitments from Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and other allies to fill any gap left by the anticipated drop in Iranian supplies. However, the influential Saudi energy minister, Khalid Al-Fali, said earlier this week that there's no need to immediately start pumping more oil, and that the kingdom, the Saudi kingdom, will hike output only after customers ask for more supply. So despite U.S. efforts to drive Iranian oil exports down to zero, many analysts still expect some oil to seep out of the country, that country.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I'm, you know, with China, the world's largest buyer of Iranian oil, and they have formally complained to the U.S. OPEC member Iraq said it could raise its output, also providing a gap on prices. U.S. crude inventories last week rose to their highest since October of 2017. So, you know, you have oil markets tightened, or they have tightened amid the OPEC output cut deal, sanctions on Venezuela and Iran. And, of course, there's unsteady production in Libya. The drop followed Brent's rise above $75 per barrel for the first time this year on Thursday after Germany, Poland, Slovakia suspended imports of Russian oil via a major pipeline, citing poor quality. So the move cuts parts of Europe off from a major supply route. Russia said it planned to stop supplying clean oil via pipeline on April 29th.
I think that's start, Melody. They're going to start supplying clean oil.
They're going to start? Did I say stop?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
That was a Freudian slip.
Yes, it was. Thank you.
Hey, my pleasure. Well, you know, turning back to the U.S., after announcing it would be closing, 45 of its 973 stores this year, Pier 1 Imports may also now be headed toward a reported bankruptcy restructuring. The announcement by S&P is based on Pier 1's declining store performance, which S&P says continues to deteriorate significantly. The credit agency said that the negative outlook reflects, you know, we do not see a path for Pier 1 to return to profitability in the coming 6 months to 1 year. You know, S&P has also downgraded Pier 1's credit rating as it finds more concerns about the retailer's ability to pay back its creditors. Now, as listeners know, as we've been reporting, Pier 1 certainly isn't the only retailer that succumbed to store closures and the pressures of bankruptcy. In 2019 alone, Charlotte Russe, Payless Shoe, Shopko, and Gymboree have all announced Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection filings.
And many more to come for the rest of the year. But, hey, industrial production manufacturer 3M. They announced yesterday that it will cut 2,000 jobs worldwide. They were citing a weakness in key markets that led to a drop in the first quarter sales. And, of course, 3M makes a wide variety of industrial goods and tools as well as everyday items, Post-its notes, so forth. And today sales fell 5%. To $8 billion. We'll finish this up when we come back from our break, and we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned. We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
By Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com, and please make sure you sign up for our newsletter. And we do have some blogging going on, and I'm looking for, we are trying to come into the new technology that's available through the internet. You know, with all the YouTubes, and you know, I think that's it seems like where everyone is heading or has headed. We're probably a little bit of a late bloomer when it comes to the YouTubes and online and blogging and all that kind of stuff. So we're trying to catch up, ladies and gentlemen. As I said, I'm from the old school. We do business the old-fashioned way. We do earn it, and we don't sell you things just so we can sell them to you. I do believe in the product that I sell, and I do believe it is the insurance for your wealth, as your home insurance is for your home. And it's very important to have more than 5 and 10% of your assets in gold. That's my personal opinion. And again, I always give the example, if you have a quarter of a million dollar home, why would you insure it for 5% of or 10%? I mean, it makes no sense at all. You insure it for replacement cost. And that's what you do with gold and your wealth. It's that simple. You're converting those fiat dollars, that which takes more and more of those to buy the things that you need on a daily basis. What does your bank pay you to store your money? You're losing against inflation. And so you convert those worthless fiat dollars into real money. And I know everybody talked about the Basel III Accord and that the gold was going to go skyrocketing. And it's just, it took away from the importance of the Basel Accord. It wasn't just about gold prices going higher. It was about monetizing gold. It was about using gold as how it has been used for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. That was the importance of that. And that it is becoming part of the playbook. So will gold prices go higher? Of course they're going to go higher. When are they going to go higher? No one knows, but they're going higher. Same way with silver. We're going to talk about the gold and silver ratio here for the blog. And that is the latest, and that's what I was ramping up to, Dave. It took a long road, but so this is for you folks out there who have oodles and oodles. If you have oodles and oodles of money, you buy gold. Get it preserved. If you have oodles and oodles of gold and no silver, it's a great time to be trading some of that gold for silver. And Dave is going to explain why.
Thanks, Melody. Well, last summer, some of you may remember that an article in our American Survival newsletter explained the gold-silver ratio and why at 78 to 1, it was an excellent time then to buy silver. Many readers heeded our observations. And three quarters of a year later, comparing the prices of gold and silver suggests now's the best time, since at least November, to trade some of your gold for more silver. Here's why. The ratio of gold's price to silver's has exceeded 85 for about a month now, and was over just last week, it was over 86 before slipping to 85.4 to 1 yesterday. Now, to calculate the gold-silver ratio, you simply divide the price of gold by the price of silver. So 85.4 equals the price of gold, $1,279 yesterday morning, divided by the price of silver, $14.98. Now, it's low. Over the past 5 years, it's been 58 to 1. Its 2018 high of 86.4 was hit in November. Before that, the previous time it hit 80 to 1 was in March 2016.
Well, you know, Dave, the ratio is often set by governments to stabilize money, and ranging from 12.1 and 15 to 1.
Yeah, that is hundreds of years before the 20th century. There's a chart in the blog that shows literally centuries of flat line, a flat horizontal line until you get to, you know, the 20th century. You know, the Roman Empire officially set the ratio at the 12 to 1. The U.S. government fixed it at 15 to 1 with the Mint Act of 1792. Then the discovery of massive amounts of silver in North and South America, combined with the number of successive government attempts to manipulate gold and silver prices, well, that led to, you know, much greater volatility in the ratio throughout the 20th century. And the later in the century we got, the more volatile the ratio became. When President Roosevelt set the price of gold at 35 an ounce in 1934, that's FDR, the ratio began to climb to new and higher levels and peaked at 98 to 1 in 1939. And following the Bretton Woods Agreement in 1944, which, as listeners know, pegged foreign exchange rates to the price of gold, the ratio steadily declined.
And if my memory does serve me right, Dave, it neared that historical 15 to 1 level in the 60s and then in the late 70s after Nixon dropped the gold standard.
Yeah, and from there, Melody, the ratio rose rapidly through the 1980s, peaking at 100 to 1 in 1991 when silver prices fell to a low of less than $4 an ounce. So for all of the 20th century, the average gold-silver ratio was 47 to 1. In the 21st century, the ratios ranged mainly between the levels of 50 to 1 and 71. The lowest level for the ratio was 32 to 1 in 2011.
You say there's a wide disagreement among market analysts and traders regarding the current norm or expected average level for the gold-silver ratio?
Well, from my limited reading, admittedly, on the subject, you know, some analysts point to the 20th century average of 47 to 1. Others argue that a new higher average has been established since the start of the new millennium. In fact, the average has been 66 to 1 over just the last 10 years. Still, other analysts continue to argue that the ratio should eventually return to much lower levels, around 17 or 20 to 1.
And I'm not in agreement with the analysts that go to 17 to 20 to 1. I'm more between the 47 and the 50. That's where I think it'll eventually really, but it's still a great opportunity, and precious metals investors should care, right, Dave?
Well, they really should. You know, if the ratio is at historically high levels, like it is today, and investors anticipate a decline in the ratio, which a lot of us do, investors often buy silver. At the same time, they sell short an equivalent amount of gold, looking to realize a net profit from a relatively better price performance of silver as compared to gold at that high level. Again, today it's over 85 to 1.
Why don't you explain to the listeners the advantages of this strategy?
Well, we'll go into the beginning of it, and then I'm going to just cut it short and give listeners the opportunity to read the blog, because it does have a lot of figures in it that for listeners just might get a little bit too cumbersome. But let's look at it this way. You know, as long as the gold-silver ratio moves in the direction an investor anticipates, then their thinking is profitable, regardless of whether gold and silver prices generally are rising or falling. But right now, you can buy 85.4 ounces of silver per 1 ounce of gold. As a result, we're suggesting that clients think about the value of trading a portion of their gold for some silver to take advantage of this gold-silver ratio phenomenon. You know, we're suggesting that you look at the value of trading any amount of your gold. So I'm not even going to put a percentage on it. We have an example in the blog that shows you trading roughly 50% of your gold for gold coins for silver coins. And the fact of the matter is, without going into to the details of all the numbers, if in fact you trade silver for gold now at this 85-to-1 ratio, and the ratio drops to 40 in the 40s, 50s, or even 60s, at some point when that happens, you're going to have an opportunity to trade some or all of that silver that you bought for gold and show a very handsome profit. Now, it certainly isn't foolproof, but it's a time-honored tradition, ladies and gentlemen, that, I mean, the facts show, again, if you're assuming that this ratio is going to get smaller over the course of the next few months, especially, you know, as both the prices of gold and silver rise, then we encourage you to think about doing trading on this gold-silver ratio today.
Yeah, and I think as we've seen in the past, and what happens, we're seeing it now in the palladium market. We've seen it being traded by the paper traders pushing the level of the... I mean, sure, there might be some other minor fundamentals underneath it that pushed these paper traders in that area. But the precious metals is a very small market, and we all know how they manipulate it. And when we see numbers where... You know, it's just like the stock markets. Well, there's no fundamentals underneath that. We know what's pushing the majority of the numbers higher. Multinational corporate buybacks. I mean, ask anybody on Wall Street and they'll agree with you. And we will see this again, because you will see traders getting into the silver market and they will push the prices high along with the fundamentals that get them in there to begin with, and that'll push the numbers higher. And then in addition to that, we have a drop in the economy, and we see people with a little more fear in the paper markets, and they're looking for that security, that safe haven. They'll be going into both gold and silver, and again, that'll only add the prices, pushing the prices higher. So it's just a matter of time until they do it, and we've seen it happen before, and we're going to see it happen again. So this is the safe way of investing. This is the conservative way of investing, and a very little downside risk. And that's, to me, Dave, if you look at any other paper investment out there, I mean, the downside is so much greater, the risk, than what we have in the precious metals at this point in time. So I don't know, it's kind of like a no-brainer where you want to, you know, go into something safe, go into something conservative, and has little downside risk. It would be the precious metals. So give us a call at 800-375-4188. This is interesting, Dave, where Putin, Russian President Vladimir Putin, has signed a decree the other day to expedite citizen application from Ukrainians who live in parts of Ukraine held by the Russian-backed separatists. That's a move that observers say could hold back a peace process to end years of bloodshed. If they are granted Russian citizenship, they would have to swear allegiance to Russia. And Putin's decision could trigger a major escalation of the war that started in eastern Ukraine in 2014. I don't know how that fits into the new president. I think you're going to tell us that.
Well, we did read that the Ukrainian foreign minister, Pavlo Klimkin, called on all Ukrainian citizens in the Russia-occupied territories to refuse Russian passports. Putin said he signed the decree for humanitarian reasons, claiming people in those areas are suffering and have no civil rights left. The assumption was that the Russian government would take such a step only if President Petro Poroshenko was reelected. But Poroshenko lost Sunday's runoff election by huge margins to the comedian actor Volodymyr Zelensky, who's set to be sworn in next month. Zelensky has said his priority as president is ending the war in the East. During the campaign, Zelensky didn't sound as bellicose as his predecessor and said he wanted a peaceful resolution of the conflict. It'll be interesting, Melody, to see how this plays out with Putin's announcement. He certainly, set another case of manipulation for the Ukrainian people.
Yeah, but what does the new president want? Is he pro-Russia?
Well, he's not pro-Russia, but we don't know. He did throughout the campaign, he wasn't heavy on policy, and so this is an interesting challenge for Zelensky. I'm sure there's going to be, and he's going to come to rely heavily on some of the professionals that have been dealing with this. And I mean, he's already been tested with this announcement. His response, I'm sure a lot of Ukrainians are looking to see how he's going to, respond substantively. And as are, his friends in, other parts of Europe and the U.S. So it'll be interesting.
Well, Sudan warns the Saudis and the UAE to not meddle. There were chants praising the revolution of the people, which is a new slogan that appeared this week at a massive sit-in protest in Sudan's capital. We do not want Saudi aid, even if we have to eat beans and falafel. The chant underscored the suspicion in the protest camps about the motives of Saudi Arabia and, of course, its close ally, the United Arab Emirates. That comes after they jointly pledged $3 billion to aid to Sudan's transitional military government, which deposed Sudanese President Omar Hassan al-Bashir this month after 30 years in power. And these protests, they have spread across the country, and they've become the biggest protests in a generation, Dave.
Ladies and gentlemen, the interesting coincidence that the sounds of thunder are in the background as we talk about all this geopolitical turmoil. It's got to mean something, Melody.
Is that what that noise was?
It's got to mean something, besides the fact that some of our studios are not as soundproof as others.
And we'll be back in just a few short minutes, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. Each and every
food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. Yeah, it's interesting, Dave. You're in Pennsylvania, and I'm here in Maryland, and we've had storms going through. But I understand when I was in State College, I was up on a hill. The studio was up on a hill, and it seemed like whenever there was a storm, it came at 4 o'clock. East time, and you have these headsets, you have all this computer equipment surrounding you, the radio and everything, and it just gets a little unnerving, you know, when you see these huge strikes of lightning and
coming over Nittany Mountain.
Yeah, so I get it. And there was times when I did unplug. I said, you know, take over, I'm taking these headsets off. And because it's kind of,
I'm sorry, if you'll recall, unplug, one of 640 new words entered into the Merriam-Webster dictionary we talked about the other day.
There we go. Now we know why. We're going to finish up on the Middle East. And, you know, again, we talked a little bit of yesterday about, I guess, after Ramadan, the White House is supposed to come out with a Middle East peace agreement. But they're going to wait for Ramadan to be over, which is, I don't know, the first part of June or something. It starts in May through June. Yes. Or something like that. So that will be interesting to see. But Michael Snyder says that the Middle East is on the brink. That's the brink of war. 2019 is starting to look a lot like 1973. And for many Americans, the 1970s represent a rather depressing chapter in the U.S. history. And Snyder suggests that truth is that if we do not learn from history, it is much more likely that, of course, we're going to repeat our mistakes. And I think we all know that. Stagflation was a term that was made popular in the 70s, and it occurs when there is a high rate of inflation, but economic growth is declining or stagnant. So I'm not sure how that is relating to the Middle East, but of course we're looking at the price of oil and what we're seeing in the Middle East. And
yeah.
The State Department is going to cease granting sanction waivers, I guess, to any country still importing Iranian crude. That starts May 2nd. And again, the timing is just interesting, because when you have this happening, you have the Middle East peace announcement coming. It's just weird, Dave. It's just weird. And I mean, you know, even with North Korea going to Russia, we know the pipeline, and you see just all these things sort of like the dots are kind of connecting. So,
tell you what, I will say, which is about the only good thing I can say about Kim Jong-un, I'm going to mention something about him in a minute, is that his fedora hat that he wore to Vladivostok.
Yes.
Very classy. I want to know where that handsome hat came from. Now, we know that German automaker Daimler, which makes armored limousines, the ones used by Kim, says it has no idea where he got them, the limos. And they assured the rest of the world, primarily the United States, that it has no business dealings with the North. Now, the Daimler brand stretch limos have been seen at Kim's high-profile summits, including this week with Putin and earlier in Singapore with President Trump. Now, as we know, the sale of luxury goods, including limousines, is banned under the UN sanctions intended to put pressure on North Korea to abandon its nuclear weapons program. Nevertheless, Kim had two of these Daimler limos, Mercedes-Maybach S600 Pullman Guard, geez, and a Mercedes-Maybach S62. I can't keep up with all of this luxury nonsense, but the Daimler spokesperson said, "We have absolutely no idea how those vehicles were delivered to North Korea." Yeah, we do, though, don't we?
Well, you know, but on the other hand, sure, it could be from one of those other states, but maybe it is just Daimler Chrysler, and they're just saying that so they don't get the additional tariffs that President Trump has promised to place on the European automakers for one reason or another. So maybe they're trying just to cover their, we best deny it. We just best deny it. So it's an either or type of a thing, right? Perhaps. Dave? Did we lose Dave? Maybe they did lose power if they were having such a strong storm.
I'm back.
Strong storm?
We had a very loud crack of thunder, and I thought I'd just go offline for a second.
Oh. Anyway, the White House pushes for a debt ceiling increase. And, of course, the Democrats are divided over spending. This came out a couple of years ago. The White House is trying to push to have the debt ceiling raised while attempting to exploit these divisions among these House Democrats. And Pelosi and Mitch McConnell had agreed to start conversations over how to navigate the triple threat of fiscal deadlines looming this fall. Raising the debt ceiling, avoiding spending cuts from the sequester, and funding the government.
My God, do you mean to tell me that they're going to come to an agreement that McConnell's going to agree to not, use debt ceiling debate over, you know, to wrestle more spending cuts? And
well, you know, that discussion ended without the clear contours of an agreement. Hey, they have until, we all know that the debt ceiling expired, I believe, March 1st. And so now they're doing some fancy finagling in order to pay the bills and so forth. Extraordinary measures, they say.
Get them through the fiscal year.
Well, I think it extends it. I think it goes until, they don't give a date. They say fall.
Yeah.
The CBO estimates that the extraordinary measures is going to last until fall. So we don't know what that date is. We know we're not going to default on the debt yet unless something very serious happens, some catalyst or something.
Like a Middle East war?
Perhaps, you know, but the White House is hoping that isolating the debt ceiling as a separate issue will deprive Pelosi of a key leverage point during government funding negotiations this fall. And it also wants to remove the debt ceiling as a potential source of volatility in an otherwise strong economy. Government data releases or election. So let's change the election in there too. Government data released this morning showed, of course, the economy grew at a 3.2%. So the administration is also open to attaching a debt limit increase to the $13.5 billion disaster relief bill that's currently under consideration by Congress.
Interesting.
You know, yeah, it is, isn't it? Any comments on that, Dave?
Nope. I believe it when I see it. That is, Congress will always find a way to approve a debt ceiling extension.
Yeah.
But, you know, how both sides attempt to use it as leverage for their own largely political ends. I call me a skeptic, but, you know, until I see, you know, an agreement etched in stone, it just seems it seems too good to be true.
Yeah. Well, you know,
I'm wrong.
Well, you know, Pelosi and Schumer was at the White House this week to talk about infrastructure spending. And
what came out of that? I didn't see anything about that.
I didn't see much of it either. Yeah. So, you know, there's got to be something in the works there.
Well, it's it's good to see that there've been no leaks from that. That could signal something you know, promising.
Perhaps. But where's the money coming from that infrastructure spending? But you know what? The other thing is everybody's so stupidly focused on impeachment that there's a lot of other news that they don't get to report on until they, you know. But yeah, that is interesting that nothing has leaked out of that. So something interesting, I'm not sure we talked about this yet, about Google is getting, they got FAA approval for drone delivery.
Yeah, Wing, W-I-N-G, which is an initiative of Google's parent company, Alphabet, has apparently received air carrier certification from the Federal Aviation Administration that allows the firm to carry out state-to-state or even overseas transportation. Wing said the certification means it could start a commercial service that delivers goods from local businesses to U.S. households. Wing would be the first drone delivery firm to get certification from the FAA. You know, Secretary of Transportation Elaine Chao, who is the spouse of Mitch McConnell, said, "This is an important step, and it's an important step forward for the safe testing and integration of drones into our economy." Yikes! Now, to get FAA certification, Wing said it had to provide evidence that its operations were safe. It added that it had supplied submissions, including data that demonstrated how a delivery from Wing carried a lower risk to pedestrians than the same trip made by car. Wow.
Wait, so they're going in competition with Amazon?
Yeah, it appears so.
But Google would offer their services to anyone, like UPS, except by drones.
Yeah.
Pick up and delivery, I guess.
But very interesting.
The company's drones, they're electric, and they've already made more than 70,000 test flights. They have completed more than 3,000 deliveries in Australia. Wing said it would be getting in touch with businesses and residents in Blacksburg and Christiansburg, Virginia, over the next couple of months. And, of course, they want to demonstrate the technology, respond to questions, garner any type of feedback, and with the company aiming to start a delivery trial later in the year. That's, yeah. You know what? It was weird. I went into Staples the other day, and I was looking for something to add to my phone, and there's packaging for drones. There's two drones sitting there, and I'm thinking,
are they looking at me?
I don't know, but it was just bizarre, you know? It was just, you know, just because if I usually buy my office supplies online and so forth, but I went into Staples, and, you know, just
we live in interesting times.
We do, we do. And I just want to be around. I hope the good Lord allows me to stay here on this planet long enough so I can see flying automobiles.
Oh, man, I have dreamed about that day since the first episode I ever saw of the Jetsons, Melody.
Me too. Me too. And, you know, considering if I'm here on this earth, I'm going to be a much, much older to where I probably wouldn't be able to drive a vehicle. But perhaps there will be the flying automobile will be autopiloted. So that it doesn't matter what age you will be, you will be able to, you know, get around, and you won't have to be hassled.
I now foresee a merger of Uber and Southwest Airlines. You heard it first here, ladies and gentlemen, on Financial Survival. Don't necessarily quote us on that, please, but if it comes to pass, you heard it here first.
Well, you know, there's been so much discussions about San Francisco, the waterfront, how nasty it is, with, you know, just all kinds of stuff on the sidewalks. In fact, you have a Starbucks that is actually putting containers for used needles. And I do think to myself, how far have we come or declined to where that is just a normal acceptance?
Yeah. I used to, when I lived in D.C. many years ago, I lived in a neighborhood that had one of the first needle exchange boxes. Well, I guess it wasn't a needle. It was a needle deposit box. It was, I believe it was on a stop sign. It could have been on a light pole near Logan Circle. In you know, an area of just wonderful, beautiful brownstones.
And so, you know, now San Francisco's renowned waterfront hosts, so, you know, all these admiring tourists and so forth. And we've seen recent examples of strife in that city. And but they do have a housing problem. They do have a homeless problem. And the entire board of supervisors was roasted on social media this month for rejecting a 63-unit housing project because it would cast shadows over a nearby park in an area with a little green space. But it's okay to allow feces and everything else on this. It's just, you know, anyway. Mm.
Yeah, you know, it's a realtor, John Townsend. He talked about the traffic after a ride-hailing company Lyft went public in March. And he complained about the market for single-family houses under $2 million is going nuts. It's crazy.
Wow, it is crazy. And it's crazy. We're out of time. That hour went by fast. It is Friday. Ladies, make sure you get to the website, sign up for newsletters, so you can get the information on the silver ratio, gold-silver ratio. And we'll be back on Monday. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Whoa!